The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Bengals beat writers, fantasy football failure Fletcher Page and Paul Dana Jr. take you inside Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented, as always, by our good friends at 50 West Brewing Company. If you have not been down to 50 West and drank that Christmas cookie straight from the tap, I don't know what's wrong with you. It is delicious. If you're in a town, Christmas time, you're coming back to visit the family, you want some of that local brew, 50 West has delicious beers for you. If you are trying to figure out a way to get through these awful last two games of the season, 50 West Production Works is waiting on you. If the Bengals announce they're going to bring Marvin Lewis back, I expect to see a cast of thousands drinking their faces off at 50 West. What do you think, Fletcher Page?
That would test the surplus.
It would test the surplus. We don't need to... lock up the beer fridge, the playoff drought fridge, yet since we know that it's going to be another year now officially.
Oh, yeah, I remember that being a thing.
Yeah, we're going to have the playoff drought fridge. But you want the beer in there to be fresh. So you don't want to drink 28-year-old beer. Hey, big announcement when it comes to the Bengals playoff drought streak. You want to hear it? They are now officially the fifth long tied for the fifth longest playoff win drought streak in NFL history with the Washington Redskins, who also went 28 years when they went all the way to 90. I should have had that number right in front of me. But the Redskins, at some point during their history, also had a 28-game losing streak. So, Bengals' fifth longest now ever in NFL history.
Yeah, it's never good when the streak that you're tying like somehow has like an asterisk for the Korean War in it.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's pretty much where it's at. The longest is 50 years by the Chicago/St. Louis/Phoenix/Arizona Cardinals. They literally had four different team names for the Cardinals over course of 50 years was the longest playoff win drought in NFL history. I don't think the Bengals are going to reach that, and if they do, they'll definitely have a slash.
What will we be doing?
Where I'm going to retire to, or potentially, be working on like caskets. I'll be doing the 50-year drought anniversary BBP. God, if that is the case, you need to pick my casket, shove me in it, and shoot me. I give you permission if we're doing that. Please, not that. So here's what we're going to do today. Because there's just not a whole lot else to say. I want to start with talking about our two previous podcasts. The Deuce from last week, the Media Roundtable. Myself, Fletcher, Richard Skinner from Local 12, Kat Terrell from ESPN, Jay Morrison from The Athletic. We all discussed the question that you have had
Is Marvin coming back? Is Hugh going to be the guy? Who is the future core of this franchise? We also discussed covering the end of days and tough questions and things like that. If you are wondering our thoughts and really great, informed, measured, entertaining conversation on the on those issues, please go back and listen to The Deuce from last week. We dive into all of it, and we can't recreate how informative and to the point that all was. So if you want to hear that, go back, listen to The Deuce. That is there. On the walkout, we discussed the roster not being a complete rebuild. And I was kind of surprised, you know, the response that we have seen from Liz. You guys basically laid out why they should keep Marvin. And I viewed it as quite the opposite. As you see a young core, you see this group that is in place and that has the ability. And clearly there's a disconnect in other aspects of the franchise. And we've been talking about this for a long time. That I think it lays out that they've never more needed a fresh voice to come in and energize the young core. Is that how you took it?
Yeah, I thought that I was almost like making a pitch for why this is advantageous for maybe a hot name out there on the coaching market. If they're going to have options, why the Bengals might be their best option.
Yeah, I will say this. I still think that this is one of the better jobs that will be available. I mean, last year there were 7 openings, and we thought there would be 8. But last year there were 7 openings, and I thought the Bengals would have been one of the better ones last year, and I think they're one of the better ones this year. You've got a good young roster. At the very least, you have a bridge QB, you know, can win you games, if not more. You have job security. You have a track record. A track record of having a lot of good drafts, a lot of production in middle rounds in particular. You can debate the first round stuff. I just think you have it all at your feet. You know you're going to get every chance to prove that you can do it, unlike we see at some other places around this league. I think, you know, we've already got a couple openings with Cleveland and with Green Bay. If the Bengals join that, I think this would be this would be right up there in that discussion if you were a hot outside candidate where you would want to go. You agree?
I do. And, you know, the division's not that formidable. I mean, the Cleveland Browns fired their coach, have Greg Williams in place as an interim, and we're still in the discussion to win the division up until last Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a spot where you can win very quickly.
Yeah. Ben Roethlisberger not getting any younger. So whenever that happens in Pittsburgh, there's going to be a fall off. Not to mention Baltimore. Is Lamar Jackson the answer long-term for them? I mean, I don't know. They are changing over at GM, so they could have a start-over happening there as well. Browns clearly on the rise. They with Baker, they appear set for the next, 10 years. So good for them, because Lord knows you don't want to look at the past 10 years with them. But, I mean, it's not like this is – especially the Roethlisberger factor – he's getting into his mid to late 30s. The way he plays, you can't imagine him going into his 40s like some of these other guys. Mm-hmm. And they don't have an answer in place for him. So if you're looking down there and you know you're going to get 3, 4, 5 years, Shula got 4 years. Christ. I mean, you know you're going to get plenty of time to try to win some division titles. And, I mean, we obviously know what the bar is for what's considered success to give you, can let you keep firing your gun anyway. But so those are kind of a couple main topics. I want to go to you guys, and we reached out and we got a bunch of questions that you all have on Twitter. So we want to try to answer as many of these for you as we can. So this is your podcast. This is the Q&A. Thanks to everybody that has sent in questions. especially the ridiculous ones. We will get to those at the end of the podcast. Big week for today in Kanye.
Yeah, well, this needs to be the podcast in Kanye, because I need
Seriously,
more than a minute.
He has been active. So we've got a lot to talk about there. So we'll get to all that stuff coming up later. Christmas movie questions are in play, so we can get into that topic. It's always fun. But let's go through what you got. I'm literally just going to go in some chronological order, some stuff that I got here. Is that okay?
Yeah, we can do. We can take as much time or as little time on each thing and make sure we knock them all out.
We'll see as many as we can get to. There's a lot. So let's go with... All right. So Tyler Boyd in the news. Do they shut down Boyd? And if so, does Marvin feature John Ross? Because he has to, even though he hates John Ross.
Well, which you, wide receiver
thank
left?
Thank you, Alex Bates.
Which wide receiver left does Marvin not hate? Or does Marvin hate the least?
Cody Core.
Cody Core, apparently.
Marv, I mean, the most beloved of all the receivers in Marv's book. I have a few things to say about each one of these three. Well, first of all, can you give a Tyler Boyd update? You wrote about this yesterday.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got a MCL sprain. Might be one of those situations where he'd probably be doubtful for this week, but could maybe play that Pittsburgh game. But given the fact that there's nothing to play for with playoffs implications, I don't know if we'll see him again.
I would think that he would get shut. This is the time of year, and they have done this the last 2 years. Guys trying to fight through stuff that maybe normally would try to fight through stuff where you would be questionable and just and push, get shut down. That makes sense here. I would suspect that that's probably what we'll see. I would suspect that he'll probably be number 15 on the IR. If he hasn't, that might happen before this podcast posts on Tuesday. We'll see. And then I brought they so you're like, oh, well, they got somebody in the practice squad. Who are they going to bring up? Well, they've got a guy named Hunter Sharp, who's 5'11", and they got my man Kermit Whitfield, who's 5'8". They need to run the all-tiny man offense. John Ross, Alex Erickson, Kermit, all like Santa sleigh style in a bunch package in front of Auden Tate.
Yes.
So it's as if Santa on top of the sleigh in front of his reindeer. Yeah. is what you run, and you just have them plow the way for an Auden Tate to break free. I like it. I think the all little receiver lineup should be wheeled out. Get Kermit out there.
I'm here for a 5 or 6 catch performance by Auden Tate.
Yeah. Well, at this point,
with a red zone touchdown, with a touchdown like a fade or something.
Yeah, just take 1 second to think about what was happening in the second half on Sunday. Jeff Driscoll under center scans left, sees John Ross and Alex Erickson, scans right, sends Matt Langle in motion, looks all the way out. There's Cody Core off in the distance. And then Bobby Hart false starts. I mean, this is – just think about what's out there right now. Anyway.
Woof.
So I asked some John Ross questions on Monday. Why – you know, he's playing a lot now. And you know what? Knock on this wood here. John Ross has gotten through this year – the second half of the season in particular, healthy. Now, you can argue he hasn't had a lot of contact because he hasn't had a lot of catches. And when he does block, he apparently does it in the back. Although one of those calls was bad.
It was iffy.
Yeah, the second one was particularly iffy. He looked like he didn't even touch him. He was in the wrong spot, kind of put his hands up, but he looked like he didn't touch him. Anyway. The answers sort of that I got on John Ross, let me play them for you. So I asked Bill Lazor and Marvin Lewis about where he's at in his development and what he needs to do to take the next step. And there was some interesting stuff in there. So here's Bill Lazor and Marvin Lewis on John Ross's development.
No question, it was underthrown to John. but does continue to be a little bit of an issue that, you know, his ability to track that ball like straight, like a ball over the center fielder's head. Uh-huh. When he's tracking it, running straight down the middle of the field, he seems to not be able to find it to get back to fight and all. Is that a bothersome scenario where he can't really find the football as readily as you'd like him to?
I thought John was on the right angle, which was the correct angle, excuse me, which was at the upright.
The proper angle on it, yep.
Yeah. The ball was inside the hash, and John actually did veer to get to the ball. I'm assuming, without talking to John yet, he didn't see the safety coming from the other side. Clearly, Jeff didn't.
Right.
So I don't know that on that particular one that I would say he didn't track it, because he did veer off his course toward it. I don't think either of them saw
the
safety.
Do you want to fight for the ball a little
Absolutely.
Bit more than that? Yeah, I mean,
you know,
protect your quarterback a little bit.
Yeah, even when we do pat and go in training camp, right? We're doing pat and go just to start practice, and we want the ball up and over the top, so they have to practice tracking it. And we tell them, if it's too underthrown, then practice like you would in a game. Go back up and get it, you know. And
that's his big flaw.
Probably awareness of you know, an inexperienced quarterback and a still developing receiver. We put them both there. And
right.
They got us in that one.
How much of John's development, he's played a lot. You finally got to see a lot of him. How much of John's development is specifically related, do you think, to what you were talking about with Tyler Boyd, is the teaching tape routes and not running the routes exactly like the teaching tape enough? Is that a huge part of where his development needs to come?
No different than anyone else.
Yeah.
I actually think the Baltimore game, the second Baltimore game, I thought he did a really nice job at the top of some routes and separated it was just one of those things at the end of the game. You watch it, I said, the guy really had a pretty good game. Well, the ball didn't come to him. You know, sometimes as a wide receiver, that happens. And you actually beat your guy a certain number of times, and on a list of them, the ball didn't come your way. But I saw it happening there, and I think it's still happening. And so we just got to get the ball to him on those. I mean, there's it's not a lack of trying on anyone's part, ours, the coaches, or the quarterbacks. It's just as you know, across the league, wide receivers are at the mercy of protection, the ball getting to them, the read, all those things.
You wanted to see John Ross play a lot of snaps, and we're seeing it now. What is the next step for him? What do you need to see for him to take the next step to what you want him to be?
Well, I just think every opportunity, John grows a bit, you know. I think every snap, every field zone, every opportunity in the game, based on time in the game and the situation in the game, he has a chance to grow. And, you know, every time there's an opportunity to evaluate him on tape on each and every play, there's an opportunity to grow for John. And he's still a young, very, very young guy, and very impressionable and coachable that way. And I just think he has to keep absorbing it and then keep making the changes and revisions, I should say, within what he's doing. And, you know, he's had an opportunity to be here with a couple of great young mentors that played as young players, and Tyler and AJ, you know, and an opportunity to learn from them throughout and how to go about it. And they stay in his ear, and which is good, and he should respect that, and that's why everybody wants him to do the right thing all the time and continue to prosper like he has.
The most interesting thing out of all of that, I thought, was Bill talking about the second Baltimore game, where you could see him breaking free and breaking open and the ball not making it to him. It just seems like every time the ball goes his direction, something bad happens.
Something's off.
Yeah. Something's off. He doesn't fight for a ball, or when he should, or doesn't locate it, or
it's underthrown somehow.
Yeah, or like it seems like there's a route depth issue, or the ball is just a miscommunication. It just seems like this is always happening. And his catch percentage is super low when targeted. And then sometimes they can't connect. You know, the deep ball on Sunday was an underthrow by Jeff Driscoll, and John, I don't think, recognized it fast enough, or as Bill pointed out, clearly didn't see the safety, neither did Driscoll, to go back to the ball and fight for it. And so, it just, to me, that seems like that's the next step for him. We've seen the red zone thing. Hey, that's great. He seems to, They seem to find a way to use him there. I still question that they really know how to use him. Nice to see them actually let him run deep a few times on Sunday. I feel like we never see that. And just throw it to him. Let the guy go run after some stuff, even though it didn't work out. But he had position. And it just, you know, is... maybe is that a matter of learning the game, understanding route concepts better, being... Is it instincts? Does he lack instincts?
That's troubling, and I do think the overall feeling with him is that he, if he's not running that straight speed, just go as fast as you can for as far as you can, you wonder, like, why can't he get open? And yeah. I'm not quick to write him off because I thought Bill Lazor's answer about Tyler Boyd might apply to John Ross in that now Tyler Boyd is running routes, as he said, that you would want on the tape to teach
people. On the teaching tape, yeah.
On the teaching tape. So can John Ross, going into his third year next season, will he be a guy that takes a step in terms of the route running? And because at the end of the day, he's got to be able to get open. And it feels like he can't do that right now.
Yeah, and that'll be even more apparent if Tyler Boyd doesn't play.
Yes.
Because now you've got him as the one. Because now what you're going to get, you're just going to get eight-man box. You're going to get eight-man box by the Browns, and we'll say none of you dudes can get open. Denzel Ward is not going to let John Ross catch a ball. Cody Core is not going to let Cody Core catch a ball. Alex Erickson, you know, I love Alex, but they need to, you know, if he's not catching sweeps or running underneath stuff, he's not a threat to do a lot more down the field. You're throwing up contested catches to Auden Tate, my man, or running the Kermit slant of slay package.
It's going to be a, if you're desperate in fantasy, Matt Lingle is your late pickup here at tight end.
Who they apparently needed to get more targets to on Sunday. So anyway, that's kind of the John Ross segment. I am not going to trot out the bust just yet on him. I'll say buh. I'm not usting.
Yeah, I still think despite the touchdowns he's had in the second half of the season, would you say this is a plus or minus year for him?
It's a zero.
It's a slash.
I think the fact that he got through it healthy, that he did make some plays.
Yeah.
I mean, the red zone stuff is plus, but I think there is a negative side to the not locating balls, the not fighting for them, the stuff that happened in Carolina. There's just a lot of other, you know, and I think he's just learning. And
whatever happened to Josh Malone?
Big year for him next year. Now there's a question. And that is actually a question from,
okay,
that was coming up. I saw that on the list somewhere. I want to give them the proper shout out. Matt Wales, M. Wales, asked what's up with Josh Malone.
Healthy scratch. No bueno.
He was in the doghouse after, I mean, basically one play, as far as I can tell, not fighting enough from popping that ball up in Carolina for that what ended up being an interception, apparently was enough to send him. Now, I know there had been whispers amongst coaches and some of the staff about him not playing tough enough the entire time he's been here, being soft as a receiver. And I think they felt like that was the perfect example of that, maybe. The Carolina game, the interception there of being soft and not being able to play tough. And that got him in the doghouse. And the second they needed him to come out of it.
Hamstring.
And a bad one. So he's a healthy scratch, but it also could be they probably just didn't, you know, he was going to maybe be 95-90%. And it's like, well, that's not better than having Auden Tate up in case they need him.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's what's happened. But, man, bad year for Josh Malone, which started so good in preseason and camp, where he really looked like he was figuring it out. And, man, everyone was so excited about the receivers in training camp. John Ross, Tyler Boyd was playing great. Josh Malone looked great. And it's like, man, they have too many. Auden Tate, they got too many. And now that's been tested. And not all of them have shown that they can do it. So that's receiver talk. Let's go. Okay, here we go. What's next? Next, we're going to have chances we go QB first two rounds of the NFL draft. Oh, the quarterback discussion. I don't know how much. Again, go back to the deuce on we talked. I made a long monologue and discussion. We had a discussion after that about Andy Dalton and his future.
I think
first two rounds, I would say, I assume that's a bit of sarcasm that you would go the first two rounds. I think one certainly is in play.
Yeah. If you think you got that guy, again, it's an advantageous situation with Andy. It could be a bridge year and get your guy and get him ready. And I think that's the potential is there.
I think the number one asset this team has, if you're trying to pitch to a new coach, is Andy Dalton slash his contract. Mm-hmm. A manageable, very manageable number by quarterback standards for a guy you know can be average to above average, win you games, get you to the playoffs, be a great bridge guy. At that number, and you can still build around him for 2 years, and you have the ability to cut him loose if you wanted to with no dead money or trade him Alex Smith style. That is one of the number one, I would argue the number one asset, that or job security of taking a job here right now. So the option is there this year or even the year after that to take a quarterback in the first round if they feel like it fell into the place, or in the second round, which they have looked into each of the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. They were interested in Lamar Jackson and didn't think that he was their type of guy. They were interested in Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State. They've been interested in those types of rounds in quarterbacks. And I think that you will continue to see them be interested. You know, they want to execute the Mahomes plan if they feel like it's there. You know, we'll see how that breaks, who that might be. Because guess what? At this point in time, last year or 2 years ago, no one thought Pat Mahomes was going to be a guy who would go 10th. So that team would trade up and trade all those assets to go 10th. So maybe a guy like that emerges.
Yeah, and nobody thought this time last year Pat Mahomes would be an MVP candidate.
Definitely not that. So I think they are open to that, and certainly if a new coach came in, would definitely be open to that idea. Now, and they would take that guy and look in, because 2021 would be the year where they need to have another option or be all of a sudden willing to pay Andy Dalton the money. Because if they were going to keep Andy, it would be he took you on the run. Whether it would be next year or the year after, he took you on the run. And you'd need to pay him what Alex Smith made, or up into the 20s and 30s. You know, if you're up into the mid-20s with Andy Dalton, it's harder to build around, obviously. And salary cap's only getting higher. Quarterbacks are only getting more important. Somebody's going to be willing to pay that. All food for thought. So, yes, I do think that will be an option for them, particularly if there's a new coach. That was from Tom Boyd at Tom. How many M's do you think my man Tom has in his name?
More O's or M's?
There's more M's than O's. How many do you think he has?
Six.
Six M's?
Mm-hmm.
Three O's. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven M's. Ah. I didn't hold it long enough. Should have been Tom. Notice the difference?
I love Twitter. I hate Twitter.
You hate, exactly. Okay, let's keep it rolling because there's a lot of questions. Thanks to everybody that has sent them our way. Will this team have any Pro Bowlers? We should find that out.
I think it'll be Geno.
He says, I anticipate Geno, but what about Bates, Boyd, or since nobody cares about the Pro Bowl, what is your favorite kind of nut? Hashtag not pecan. Obviously. Last week, the pecan ban was brought up as a good hashtag for this. The pecan ban.
I'm not on board with that. Yeah, this is just your virtue signaling, as if you're doing some good down on the streets of South Georgia, cleaning up the streets.
Look,
with slow-moving vehicles.
I have saved a life with my lifestyle. What have you done?
I've done nothing. But I like a pecan by itself. I like it in a pie.
It's fine.
I'm not here for that band.
I'm not. And did I ever ask you to be part of it?
No, but you got people swirling on Twitter now.
Look, I'm just saying that, look, that's my take. That's where I stand. I'm allowed to do that. Will this team have any Pro Bowlers?
Geno.
I think it'll just be Geno.
I think that's it. I mean, I think Tyler Boyd, there's so many wide receivers.
Joe Mixon will be an alternate. I would think, yeah. Joe Mixon is in play.
He's in play.
I mean, he will be an alternate. And when guys start dropping out, because whether it's a Super Bowl or whatever, I mean, he's the leading rusher in the AFC. That's something. A lot of your top rushers are all on the other side.
And Joe would enjoy the Pro Bowl. I think he's a guy that would have a good time.
Joe would very much enjoy the. He enjoys most anywhere he's playing football, and he likes hamming it up with everybody else. I mean, it's kind of interesting. He's missed two games and still leads the AFC in rushing, and his 4.8 is up there. I'm amazed at how many guys have, with a lot of carries, have a very high average this year. There are one, two in the AFC alone. One, and this is at minimum 98 carries. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven guys averaging 5 yards per carry or better. That's a crazy number. It really is. Let's go back to last year in 2017. How many guys do you think averaged 5 yards per carry or more last year with minimum 98 carries? In the AFC.
Wait, there's seven this year?
Seven this year.
I'm going to say three.
One. 5.0, Deion Lewis, New England. Kareem Hunt was 4.9, Drake 4.8, Alex Collins was 4.6. I mean, it's a weird thing in this year. There were three in 2016. Mike Gillisley, who in Buffalo, Bilal Powell in with the Jets, and also LeSean McCoy in Buffalo that year. All were over five, everybody else under. There is just a lot of high efficiency running going on. So that if you're looking at who would go to the Pro Bowl in the running back position in the AFC, you know, Joe's up there at 4.8, but Philip Lindsay, Melvin Gordon, then I'd say Joe, you've got Connor. He's been injured, so he probably wouldn't play. I think he's got to be in the discussion.
I'm gonna put him in.
I think that Mixon should make it.
He's gonna get another 25 carries at least on Sunday. So
yeah, I mean, and to have the most total yards, 4.8 per lug, 8 touchdowns. He's been the sole offensive force. I mean, if you're picking four running backs, he's got to be. I think he would have to be in your top four on the AFC.
Yeah, I'm going with Joe over Tyler just because Tyler's exceeded expectations. He had a great year, but there's so many wide receivers that he'll be competing with for spots.
He has the most attempts of anybody in the AFC as well.
Joe does.
He has a little bit of workhorse to him. That's missing two games. Think about that. Anyway. So, yeah, so I would say Mixon should be in play there. But outside of that, I don't see anybody. First year, AJ will not have made it, unfortunately for him, due to injury. All right. I'll let you take this one.
Okay.
Who would be the better Spider-Man between John Ross, Joe Mixon, and William Jackson III?
I think it's Joe Mixon, and I'm going to kind of go off the fact that I think his enthusiasm would carry him in that role.
Was Spider-Man enthusiastic?
No, but I think that there's some things that Spider-Man does that I think Joe would embrace. you got to have like a willing spirit to do some of those things.
Yeah,
and I think Joe would be in it. See, John might be thinking it over too much. William Jackson's talked about, you know, not always playing with his instincts.
Mm-hmm.
That's Joe.
He just goes.
He's on the Spidey senses.
Spidey is mostly about his Spidey sense.
Yeah. So Joe would just go.
Williams got some good Spidey sense instincts.
He does, but he gets in his head. You wrote a good story about him, though, where he said sometimes he wasn't always using those instincts.
Fair.
He's thinking too much.
Correct. It's a good answer. Well thought out.
But Joe is...
That was a better answer than I thought you'd give.
Well, he might be a little too muscular for the suit. That might be... That'd be pretty intense.
You're supposed to look muscular in the suit.
I know, but Spider-Man's kind of... He's got that limber feel to him, you know? Joe's kind of... Might be a little muscle-bound for the role.
He dropped 10 pounds this year, you know?
That's true.
I'm not answering the Jose Mourinho good fit for the Bengals head coach, but I like the question. Why did it take these circumstances for Marvin to coach with a chip on his shoulder? These fourth down attempts have me amped every time. This is from Michigan. I think it's supposed to say Michigan's daddy with an X where the M is. Let's see what you did there. At Stewart. These fourth down attempts have me amped every time. If Marvin does stay, could we see him coach aggressively? I think there is a whole lot of who gives a damn that's been at play here. And understand I players react well to that type of stuff, and I do think that there is a trying to help the players have more fun and play more loose to those calls. I think he wants it to feel that way, that we're going for it. I mean, Joe Mixon, one of the more notable quotes of the year said, "I wish we need to be playing more to win and less not to lose." And I think that resonated. That was something that was felt in the locker room. The need just generally to be more aggressive, as everybody else in the league was doing it. We have seen more of that lately. I don't know. Do you have a? What's your theory on that?
I'm just going to stick to the rule instead of the exception. I mean, we've seen what Marvin has done in 16 years, and I think if he were to come back, and if the same situations were to arise in week one or week three or week five next year, I think that he is who he is. And I think that he would not be as aggressive. So I think this was a situation where it was like, why not? And there was some desperate calls there made during desperate times. But I don't think that this is a new Marvin.
The league is changing. And maybe that's part of what's influencing him is understanding of those very basic analytics, I mean, that people have been looking at for years now. I mean, they're clearly behind the times a little bit on that around here. I mean, he talked about when Hugh came here that Hugh was going to bring in some analytics, and Hugh was on the, let's say, resistant side to analytics in Cleveland. So maybe some of that is seeping in as you see more coaches doing it. He's kind of hopping on that trend. But I agree. The response from players has been almost unanimously in support, even when it hasn't worked. Loving the aggression, loving them. It does help, I think, create more of a believing atmosphere in your team, in your players, and it makes it feel more fun for them.
Yeah, and I do think that that did help instill some confidence, especially with Jeff Driscoll, to know that they would let him go for it on two-point conversions or give Joe Mixon the ball on fourth down. I think that for younger players or guys that are trying to find themselves, I do think that helps.
And when you feel like you're running the ball well, that's usually the key to winning in those situations anyway, even though they have gotten stopped giving it to Joe. I do want to take a quick break in this great Bengals discussion to talk about something that happened on Sunday Night Football. I'm a big fan of the Chris Collinsworth slide, the slide in. So anyway, in case you're amongst the uninformed, every Sunday Night Football opening starts on Al Michaels and then pans out, and Chris Collinsworth has been sliding in. So people have been rating his slides as the year has gone on. It's really – there's no real reason to – like why you would keep doing it this way other than it's become a thing socially. Well, they shocked the world on Sunday and started close in on Michaels, and then all of a sudden panned out to the other side, and Collinsworth came in from the other way. I mean, so no joke, and it's pretty much all my wife looks forward to watching Sunday Night Football is, like, she literally will pause it, like, he's about to do his slide, you need to get in here.
Yeah, finish pouring your beer.
It's slide time. And so we both gasped aloud with excitement. Oh! just did not see that coming. And I love how they're embracing it.
It's a well-done play.
It is. I love how it's become a thing. Somebody put together a compilation of all of them. Mm. They're not all created equal.
Yeah, but now that I feel like it's becoming like your favorite local band that's blowing up, and now everybody's talking about it on social media, you don't want to get too saturated.
No. Well, the season's almost over. There's only so many slides left.
That's true.
What, you got 1, 2, and a couple playoff games? Four slides tops?
You might be that guy that's like, I remember when Chris Collinsworth was sliding in from
the
right
side. I remember when he slid in from the right.
I was here then.
Dems was the days. Anyway. We needed to mention that since that's also in my feed right now. Okay. From Nick Noland, at Nick Noland. Any names on either side of the ball you don't expect back next year that might come as a surprise to most fans? I have one. Do you have any?
Well, I mean, there's a list of names like, Quez.
Well, he's a free agent.
Right.
So I would say let's go non-free agent division. So
Tez. Trying to come up with a third that rhymes with them. Quez, Tez.
Vontez, Quez, and yeah, there's no other. It's hard to find Ez's. So typically when looking for this, there's one place that I go.
Mm-hmm.
Big cap number, dead money, right? I mean, that's where you find these guys. The look at those guys for 19. Here's the most notable. I'll just pick out of the top. Anybody that would give you a cap savings of at least, let's say, $2 million that have minimal dead money. Dalton, not happening. Green would be $3 million in dead money. I don't think that they really care about saving $12 million and not having AJ Green. Gino. Dre, not yet. Here's the thing. People ask about Dre a lot. They would save $6.8 million against the cap, but they'd have to eat $4.2 million. Dre's contract turns after next year. So the structure of Dre's contract will turn for them in. So for after the next season, the 2020 offseason, they would save 8.5 and eat 2.8.
Okay, well
that's when that easy. Becomes something that you would do. So, Dre is going to be here next year. I can tell you that, and especially with it unknown whether they're going to sign Darquez.
Right.
You know, so that's part of that. So you keep going down.
I think
Tez, obviously. I think this is a man. It should be a no-brainer at this point because his play's fallen off. I mean, you're saving 6.846. 6.85, you are saving against the cap. You're eating 1.8, which is a bigger number than they like to eat. However, the sheer number that they would be saving and the other junk involved, I think, makes that a no-brainer for somebody they would move on from. Here's the name that I think might surprise people, and I think people know why. Clint Bowling. Clint would be a 5.3 savings on only $500K in dead money. Christian Westerman is there. He obviously has fans outside of the building and inside of it. And, he has proven himself a valuable, versatile piece. He is a leader. But, if you're trying to clear the decks a little bit for the young guys to play, I would probably keep Clint around, and Clint has been good to them, and he's the type of guy that they would keep maybe 1 year extra, but I would keep an eye on that. He would be my surprise guy that you could see because of the numbers that I just mentioned. And having Hopkins has played well, Westerman, Redmond, whatever you think about him, whatever influx of guys would come in, maybe they want to get a low-end free agent or as a draft pick or – whatever. I'm not sure where they will fall on that, but I would keep an eye on that. Other guys, Gio, I don't see them getting rid of Gio. Sean Williams, he had 4 picks this year. I don't see another guy, unless they go out and got somebody else, he would save 3.45 and eat 800. I don't see them doing that. And after that,
what's Gio's?
Gio's would save 3.8. They're not going to. Gio is not going anywhere. For he is like Michael Johnson.
Yeah.
Or like Leon Hall was, the prototypical perfect employee. The gold standard that they want players to be on, off the field, the way they play, their toughness, everything. Gio is the epitome of what they want a Bengal to be. And they're not going to do that guy wrong. So I think he will fill out that. And he's still got game left. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that he hasn't had a ton of touches this year behooves him going forward because, you know, the tread issue. So I think, you know, I don't think he would go anywhere. So that's my look at sort of the core that you could see. Could, you know, Cordy Glenn wouldn't. He's basically a series of one-year contracts. No dead money. They would save 9.2. They need a left tackle. I don't, you know. He was good enough. He had the injury issue, but I think they don't want to go into left tackle hell again. 9.2 is a good number for him. I think they stay with Cordy. So that answers that. Whew, all right. At Burrs W, in your opinion, is Marvin gone? BBP2 last week.
Yes.
We answered that. What are the chances the Bengals re-sign Tyler Eifert, and do we draft a tight end in the first three rounds? Ooh, tight end position. You start with tight ends and give me your thoughts.
Yeah, I've thought about the Tyler Eifert thing recently, and I do, if I had to go one way or the other, I think we might have seen the last of Tyler here in Cincinnati, unfortunately. I mean, he was off such a great start, and then the injury was gruesome, but... And so, yeah, now, so do you still have the list up there? You know, there's going to have to be a decision made on CJ, correct?
Well, they're all free agents.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, Eifert, Uzama, Tyler Croft, all free agents.
I think CJ's done really well for himself this year. I mean,
his toughness has won a lot of
yes.
fans.
I mean, his nickname is Warrior.
Yeah.
So... I mean, I don't know about where they would draft a tight end, but I certainly think, I mean, they've got to add a tight end.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I'm going to raise my hand and say I was team draft a tight end last year
mm-hmm.
because you had to see this coming.
Or you shouldn't have been surprised for the way it played out.
Right. Well, and I, you know, you. I mean,
you
I was
you don't foresee you gotta, a broken bone.
You're surprised when everyone goes down.
Right.
When you lose five tight ends. Five of your top six. Mm-hmm. However, you know, that the offense was so built on that position being multiple and dynamic to not secure that into the future is a problem. I think they need to continue to look. They need to look aggressively, even if that's where your value free agent comes from. If we're talking about a Jared Cook, who I said they should have traded for.
Yeah, he has more catches than all of the Bengals tight ends combined.
Correct.
This season.
I mean, somebody like that, they need to try to assure that they are dynamic. And so they're going to have to sign somebody, whether it's their own guy or somebody else.
When does your first mock draft come out?
Stop. That seems like an unnecessary question.
I'm just thinking in my head, you know, the quarterback and linebacker and tight end. And I'm just, you know, your mock would help me. I'm good. You're good. The podcast isn't good for the look. You're giving me a look.
People know what this look is. It's the. I will say this. I like to wait until there needs to be some anticipation. This is not McShay Kuiper world. We have other stuff going on. Okay, but many decisions to happen. Usually, post combine is the first.
Post combine. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I like to do four of them because I like them all to be a little different in certain ways. And post-combines when it really gets really real.
Gotcha.
Real, real, real.
Well, right now, just be too much speculation. You're right.
Don't even know where they're picking yet.
Right.
I like my stuff to be informed, so I want to know where they're picking. I want to talk to people of relevance and try to make good decisions off of that. So you feel like you're gathering something. I'm not just doing what a lot of people do and just splattering names across a bunch of numbers and so you can go and clickbait it. I want there to be something that you know is informed. There's a reason I'm picking people there. There's a reason for what I'm doing. And I need you got to have time to talk to people about that. So anyway, and after the combine is a great time to do that.
Respect.
All right. Thank you. Let's do a few more of these. T-Bone. Got to love that T-Bone at T-Bone Capone OG. Oh, I like that name. I have a question. Please explain to me why supporting the Bengals after 35-plus years should I continue? Signing Marvin to an extension after his failures, high draft picks year after year, and how many playoff wins? It's old, tired, and played out, kind of like me at this point. Gotta love that T-Bone. I don't think T-Bone's played out. I wish I had more friends with the nickname T-Bone. I don't know why people support it. You can support it if you want. I will say this. For myself, when I was a fan as a kid, I really enjoyed the worst seasons. Like, I just kind of found them fun. The worse they were, the more I embraced the fact that I was the lone man standing there.
Made you feel more authentic?
Yeah, it made you feel authentic. Like, you were real. I was there at the lowest moment. I wanted the moments to get lower so that I could say that I was still there. That was as a kid. That gets a little old after a number of years. You want to have felt the mountaintop occasionally. So I get that. I went on a rant about this not that long ago. I really feel like the right coach comes in this and it can go whoosh. Like the Rams, like Seattle did. I really don't think it's some desert land. I do think that there's hope, and I think in this league it happens so fast. Teams go from laughing stop to talk of the mountain so fast. The Eagles never won a Super Bowl. The Rams were a joke. They moved. They didn't have any fans. Everyone's like, who's going to even like this team when they showed up in L.A. with Jeff Fisher on Hard Knocks? And then now they're everybody's favorite. It happens. It happens fast. It can happen fast. That's all I'll say. Fans not being there, I get it. And I had no problem with it. I get them just saying screw it. If you're asking why stay, because it happens fast. It can happen fast. Can you give me your top three desired candidates for head coach? We know it's going to be Hugh, but if you had a magic wand. And I've got this from a few people. If you could choose, who would you choose? Do you have anybody?
Well, I'm kind of viewing this the way that you're talking about the draft.
Mm-hmm.
I've sort of been putting this off until I can realistically have a list. I will just say this. Hugh should not be on that list.
Yeah.
It needs to be clean and moving forward. New vision, new voice.
I have a couple on my list, and one of them is maybe gonna, I'm telling you, I don't know if I've said this here on this particular pod. I honestly can't remember. I think when Vance Joseph gets whacked by Denver, he would be a very interesting guy, and let me tell you why. I think Vance Joseph was a head coach in the making, and he got hired there too early. He needed a few more years as a coordinator in that type of a role before I think he was ready. I think he has all the right stuff to be a head coach. And he's kind of gotten a raw deal in Denver. Look at Case Keenum, Paxton Lynch. Like, he hasn't had a quarterback since he's been there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a quarterback, you got nothing. Now, he's made some bad decisions and all of that. But I think having that experience is more – now is really the point where he should have been ready to become a head coach and be primed to become a head coach. His experience is all the better because he was a head coach and you can learn from that. I would be interested to see how he does in a second go-round if he gets one.
Yeah,
and because of his connections here, it could be here.
Right. I'm not scared of failure if a coach has failed somewhere else because, again, like you said, that it's all a part of the learning process for somebody, especially like him that was in his first gig and might have been in there a few years early. all your guys are always defensive. All the names you've trotted out here on the podcast.
Because I don't see any. Look, I would be interested in Mike McCarthy. He's done quarterback transition in the past. Mm-hmm. That's something that's important. If that's part of your future, he's an offensive guy. He understands how you do things as far as homegrown talent. He would be the most offensive guy. I just don't see. I don't look around and feel like I see the next
right
Nagy, McVay, you name them.
Yeah, I like the I like your counter move to the trend. Yeah. You're countering the trend. I'm down.
Eberflus from the Colts as well. Yeah. Chris Richard, we've mentioned on here many times before in Dallas. Those are the young guys where I see the fast risers. So that's me. Did you have anybody else on your list?
I like I said, not Hugh, maybe a young defensive mind that's going to try to counter the trend in the NFL with these offenses.
Okay. I'm trying to see if there's anything else I need to get to. All right, let's go right into the fun questions because we're getting to the end here. It's time. Okay. Let's just run through these here. Favorite condiment?
Hot sauce.
Hot sauce? Horseradish.
Okay, so we mix together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could. I feel like we're off the beaten path a little bit. Mm-hmm. I like something with some good horseradish element, even the horseradish mustard
I see.
That's out there. I'm a big horseradish guy. I like to get just enough where it whoosh opens you up.
Yeah.
A nice nostril attack.
Well, I'm going to reveal that I'm not big on the condiments. I don't like mayonnaise. I don't like ranch dressing. Mm. I don't like some of that stuff. But I'll eat hot sauce on anything.
What do you do to make your head so shiny? Think at Pete Wensler, one of our favorites.
I'm holding out on this one, so it's all you.
you use a special
product.
I use a product. You use a product
it's
to
not
make
gel.
Your hair so nice. No.
I don't live in Tallahassee, Florida. I don't use gel. But it is a product.
It's a product. Okay. That's just my natural glow.
You just wake up like that?
I shower. It's just a post-shower glow, and I have a good skull.
Strong skull.
You want to have a strong, well-shaped skull. That's important. Another one from Pete. I got one. Can you make my wife stop asking about Sam Hubbard? I cannot.
The guy is sculpted. He's chiseled.
He is like, he's how God intended man to look.
He's got good hair.
Good hair. Does he use product?
He probably uses product whenever he's out and about on the night.
I know Optimistic Bobby is very jealous of his Instagram feed.
Of Sam's?
For a while, yeah. That was mentioned our live draft podcast. It was his jealousy of that. Do dogs lick people because this one's from David Murphy? Do dogs lick people because they are trying to get to the bones right beneath our skin?
That's odd. I've got a dog, and we couldn't figure out why, but he kept trying to go for the eyes, licking, and it's because he's licking the sleep out of the eye.
Oh,
which is kind of gross.
I think dogs lick because they love. They're just lovers, and that's how they kiss.
Yeah, and it's also, isn't it a way that a dog kind of tries to show respect in the hierarchy of alphaness?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's your dog bowing down and submitting to you as the master.
Correctly, correct, yes. Okay, last one before we get to this week in Kanye. From Chris Brantley, you and Fletcher Page, top five Christmas movies. We don't have to go all the way to five, but we can do like a top two or three. If you have them.
Yeah, you know, I actually like Love Actually. I know that's a big debate out there.
Ugh.
I think Die Hard and Batman Returns are Christmas movies.
Okay.
And I like the old school. I'm into older movies. So, like, what is it?
Wonderful Life.
Wonderful Life, all that stuff. The Christmas Story with...
Mm-hmm.
I like that stuff. And then I'm also a sucker, too, for, like, Muppets and Snoopy. Mm-hmm. I'll sneak in and watch the cartoons.
Charlie Brown Christmas,
stuff peanuts. Like that. I'm here for it.
Number one. Do you have a number one?
I'll let you know if I think I'll go
number one National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah,
it's the best.
Throw that in there. Yeah.
And I specifically will not watch that any time of year until between Thanksgiving and Christmas happens, and then you have you can max out. You can watch as many times as you want to, but you're not allowed to watch it any other time of year.
And so
it makes
it
special.
You can quote the whole thing.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm that guy. I love that. I love that movie. I think it's in most lists because it's good. Elf would be probably my number two. No, Elf would be my number three. Christmas Story would be my number two. I like Christmas Story is one that we played when they do the marathon on TBS on Christmas Day. I mean, that's just like tradition at my house. We would just sit there and it would be on. We'd let it repeat all day because you just laugh at the same parts. And now, especially when we put our giant jacket on my daughter, who's like, you know, one and a half, and her arms stick out to the side, and we did this at the zoo. We went to the zoo the other day. She fell while walking, and she just hit the ground like she surfed and just didn't touch the ground at all because her jacket was silent. And it was just straight out of The Christmas Story, which that's just one of the best scenes ever. So anyway, that would be my top three.
Yeah, I can get down to that. I think Elf has grown on me. Will Ferrell movies get funnier to me as I'm getting older. So yeah. Elf's a good pick.
So who was your number one?
I think I'm going to go with Christmas Story number one.
Christmas Story number one?
Yeah. Actually, you know what I like? I'm a sucker for Billy Bob Thornton. So
Bad Santa?
Bad Santa is an awesome movie. It's not something that you would play all day, obviously.
No,
if you got the grandparents or the kids coming in on Christmas Day. But if Bad Santa is like in my top five.
Yeah, Bad Santa is good. All right, time for Today and Kanye, and there's a lot happening. We can go all the way back. Kanye is just in a tweet storm.
Well, I just want to make sure that people understand how many realms Kanye influenced and ruined and burned down or built up last week. So he had a feud with Drake, which it wasn't much of a feud. It was just a tweet rant about Drake. There's been a long-standing sneak disses and rap battles and feuds between Drake and Pusha T, who is the CEO of Kanye's record label. That's maybe in the weeds too much. But Kanye also reached out to Bob Dylan. So he reached out to Bob Dylan, wanted to do a collab, you know, because he had worked with Paul McCartney a few years ago.
Kanye, love your beef.
Those two are... Which that sparked some Twitter stuff about is Bob Dylan actually great? Because, you know, a lot of people love Bob Dylan. A lot of people don't really get Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
Kanye also reached out to a video game developer in New York City last week. I think he's developed the game Metal Gear Solid, and he's got another game coming out. He's from Japan. So the video game community was buzzing with that. There was a large section of people that were like, Kanye, please do not ruin our favorite video game. That was going on. And then there was also the Ariana Grande. Pete Davidson was on Suicide Watch.
How is Kanye connected to that?
Because Ariana Grande had used Kanye and Drake's Twitter beef to promote her own single, which sparked Pete Davidson, her ex-boyfriend, to come out in support of mental health while revealing that he no longer wanted to be alive and was considering leaving the planet, which led to a huge... wave.
Kanye is connected to everyone's worst situation.
It really is, and I'm not trying to get political, but you know, like the news cycle around our president, it can only be rivaled by the Kanye West news cycle, where if you're trying to keep up with one thing, it will be washed out very quickly with Bob Dylan lyrics or a comedian potentially committing suicide.
Truly incredible stuff. What a week for Kanye. There's still time left in the year for him to keep mixing it up. You know he's going to show up on Christmas Day doing something stupid, something wacky.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the thing. Christmas Day or Tuesday, it's all the same.
Yeah,
you don't know what's under
matter.
The tree.
It doesn't matter. All right. Well, this was, I hope, helpful for people as they try to cope and we try to everyone go through these times together as we await the true day of reckoning. It's like Christmas is celebrating the birth of Christ, but we're all doing we all have the Advent calendar to the day the season ends, where we open it up every day. It's like the 12 days of Marvness is where we're reaching right now as we get within 2 weeks.
It's been pretty brutal December.
It's a long Counting Crows said it best.
Yeah.
It's a long December. That's what we're in the middle of right now. It's almost over, people. Almost over. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening to the BBP. We will be back with the Deuce later this week. One podcast next week for Christmas. Merry Christmas to everybody. We'll have a road trip BBP that we'll post on Sunday night, Monday morning that you'll have, and that will serve for it. And then, boom, it will be the end of the season and the long-awaited moment of reckoning. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening to the BBP. We will talk to you later. Have a good one.